And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Connor. How are you doing there,
Phil? Good afternoon, Phil.
You had a nice Christmas, by the way?
Oh, wonderful Christmas. Oh, I think we really? we were here at CIUT.
Yeah.
That's the best place to have Christmas.
Yeah, that's an explanation I wasn't looking for. And that was your Christmas. Well, anyway, it was a good one. We of course, that was Friday morning, and we did CIT Friday morning. We got our theater reviews and movies, the whole show. Today we're going to be talking to two gentlemen. We're going to speak to David Jacobs, a Toronto lawyer who has represented accused at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. We're going to talk about this issue of the Rwandans living abroad who come under pressure from the Rwandan government, which doesn't like critics, and so they many have been given a hard time and end up actually being removed back to Rwanda. And so there's been a case in Britain we need to talk about to a very positive outcome of a hearing into extradition for five Rwandans. That sounds like a very long, awkward way of saying what I had to say. Now, and at halfway point, 5:30, we're going to talk to Ishmael Reed, a very distinguished poet, novelist, playwright, musician. This guy, and he's really done, and his essays are always stimulating. And he has two, actually, that we want to interview him today. We focus was on the Broadway show Hamilton. However, as luck would have it, he has published an essay today. So we'll be on a separate subject, somewhat related. So we'll be talking to Ishmael Reed at 5:30 about Hamilton and other historical issues to do with racism in America. But right now we're joined by David Jacobs. Are you there, David?
I am. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for joining us this week. There's been an important development in Britain. A court, I've probably better let you tell us, five Rwandans were facing removal to Rwanda. So can you tell us what this case, who's it come in front of, and what is the development there?
Okay, so the case is a decision of the Westminster Magistrates Court, a judge called Emily Arbuthnot, and it's a case brought by the government of Rwanda requesting the extradition of five people. I'll do the names as best I can. Vincent Brown, Charles Munyaniza, Emmanuel Ntezirayo, Celestine Ugirishabuja, and Celeste Mutabaruka.
Oh, we should explain that you don't speak Kinyarwanda.
Not at all. But these are all people who were in Britain, and there was a request for extradition to Rwanda. What's really sort of importantly interesting about this request for extradition, and by the way, this is a decision, you can find it on the internet at a website called www.judiciary.gov.uk, mm-hmm. and just look up, frankly, look up the name Vincent Brown, and this case pops up, right? So it was a decision released very recently, on the 21st of December, and it's a very lengthy decision, about 600 paragraphs. I shouldn't put you off, but the interesting thing about the decision is that the Rwandan government, through Martin and Goga and others, argued to the court that no court since 2009 had refused to transfer, extradite accused to the government of Rwanda. And they cited the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda and the courts in Canada who had all extradited to Rwanda on assurances that that the accused, such as Dr. Leon Mugesera, whose case went
yes,
to the Supreme Court in Canada.
The Mugesera case, quite well known, I think, to many Canadians.
That's right. Reassurances from the government of Rwanda that that they would all get fair trials. So the Rwandan government then picked five cases, and said, look, we want you to look at these five cases because they're cases which show how fair we are. And frankly, they got hoisted on their own petards, as Shakespeare would have it.
Yeah, that's a good place to be hoisted.
That's right. They relied on the cases of Jean Uinkindi, who was extradited from, he was in jail in Arusha, Tanzania, and was extradited by the ICTR. Bernard Munyagishari, Leon Mugesera, Emmanuel Mubarishimana, and Charles Bandora. And so what the judge does in tremendous detail, quite interestingly and quite fairly, because at times she credits certain developers of Rwanda, is to go through each of them and say, see, well, okay, the ICTR and the Canadian courts and so on were given assurances by the government of Rwanda that these deportees, people being extradited, I guess, were going to be treated fairly and given a fair trial. And at the end of the day, the judge finds, well, that actually didn't happen, notwithstanding what was said. So she says that the courts, including the ICTR, said that found no risk of flagrant denials of justice, but she indicates that what the courts relied upon was what was happening legally, that is, in terms of letter of the law, but not what was happening actually. So she finds, for example, that not sufficient funds were made available for the defense, that defense's ability to find and get witnesses to come forward, particularly witnesses who are out of the country, was essentially stymied.
We should really underline this. This is ridiculous. And I'm glad the court noticed a rather obvious thing. Yes, you get to have a trial, but what witness is going to come from abroad and risk themselves into the hands of Rwandan authorities when all of them would have potential arrest situations for themselves? Why would they do it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure she goes that far. I must say I'm still studying the decision. But she certainly goes as far as to say that the defense wasn't given resources and so on. So she says, for example, in dealing with one of these cases, Munyagishira, she says there was a cross-appeal before the ICTR, International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda Appeals Chamber, where the prosecution didn't like an earlier ruling which required a written guarantee from the Rwanda government that the defendant be assisted by counsel with previous international experience. Well, the prosecution won that appeal, so the ICTR appeals chamber said, well, now Munyagishira doesn't have to be represented by somebody with previous international experience. So the judge writes, and I'll read this part, I agree with Ms. Malcolm, who is one of the lawyers for the people who were requested to be extradited, that in light of Mr. Witteveen's evidence, this is troubling. Witteveen was an expert witness called to be a witness on behalf of the government of Rwanda. And he gave evidence about how incompetent, basically, some of the lawyers who were assigned, and I underline assigned, to represent some of these accused. Let me say one more thing. There wasn't a budget for investigators, and the problem is that the Rwandan court came before. The Rwandan regime comes before the court in Westminster, and says to them, "Oh, don't worry, we keep changing the law." And the judge basically says, "And this isn't the judge's words. I'm paraphrasing this. Well, that's all well and good, but I'm actually not willing to kind of, given the history," and she gives a very long history of all of the efforts made by, for example, defense counsel to get funded and so on. She says, well, you know, it's nice that you've changed the law, but there's a lot of worrying things. So in the Mugesera case, and as we mentioned at the outset, Mugesera's extradition to Rwanda was upheld all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada, and again, a famous case of the Supreme Court of Canada. He was deported in 2012, but Justice Arbuthnot spends quite a long time in under a section heading called Dr. Mugesera in Rwanda, and she keeps using terms like worrying and troubling. So she says, I note worrying, two worrying developments in this case. In March 2012, Mugesera's then lawyer, Mutunzi, met with one of the officials, I suppose, as a decision to allow confidential communications between him and Mugesera had been annulled. So he couldn't have a confidential correspondence with his own lawyer.
By the way, just underline for our listeners, how could you say then a person is going to get a fair trial? He cannot have a confidential exchange with his lawyer. I mean, right. What sort of court are we turning people over to?
So the day after she writes, I'm reading again.
Of course, Mugesera has been turned over and can't get him back.
That's right. The day after, he is prevented from going to a conference with his lawyer. He's not granted legal aid. Mutunzi has to withdraw as he can no longer afford to work for Mugesera. And then he's replaced, and he's replaced again by Kenyan lawyer Otachi later on.
I know, but Mr. Otachi. He lives in Nairobi. He's not exactly able to be there on call.
Right. And she goes on at some length about how, let me just do a little bit more reading. I have to find the paragraph where...
Well, I just mentioned while you're doing that, again, the Leon Mugesera case is the case that most Canadians know. And one thing they've always left aside is the presumption of innocence. Instead, propaganda has been presented against him year in and year out. Journals talked about him. He was never tried. And people ought to remember, he was not in the country at the time of the war and genocide in 1994.
Yes, and very importantly,
detail. But he gets tried anyway and treated like a dog.
Yeah, what's interesting about it, the Supreme Court of Canada, on some rather technical legal grounds, overturned a decision allowing an appeal by Dr. Mugesera by the Federal Court of Appeal, Canadian Federal Court of Appeal. The Canadian Federal Court of Appeal went into great lengths about what they believed to be the inconsistencies and the lack of credibility of a number of the witnesses who came to testify in favor of deporting Dr. Mugesera, including Alison DeForge of Human Rights Watch. They found her to be more of a politician than a historian and discounted her evidence. Unfortunately, because the Supreme Court of Canada relied on such a legalistic, technical reading of the law, that was overlooked by the Supreme Court in a decision which has a number of legal difficulties, particularly given the clarity of the decision from the Federal Court of Appeal. I wanted to read a bit more, and she's talking again of Witteveen, who was a witness called by the government of Rwanda, and she writes this. We're back at the Munyagashiri matter. I was very concerned to hear of Witteveen's description of the trial, which is that Munyagashiri is essentially defending himself. He has a lawyer beside him. He's usually quiet, making few contributions, and when he does, it's about the contract to defend the defendant. Witteveen was present in court, and I accept his description of the proceedings. I question the professionalism of those defending Munyagashiri. And she makes a point later of saying, this witness, Witteveen, this is a witness not called by the defense. And he said, then she goes on to say, when it comes to payments for defense lawyers, I can't say without more that the government of Rwanda is being intransigent, but I consider they hadn't anticipated how expensive these sort of cases are. As the complaints to the ACT are multiplied in light of the comments of Witteveen, who is, after all, the governor of Rwanda's own witness. The governor of Rwanda bowed to pressure and changed the law. This should have happened before, and the change in law is so recent, there's no evidence how the new law will be applied in practice. I have to put in the balance the unfortunate fact that there are numerous examples of law in Rwanda being changed, but being very slow to put into practice. I concluded that the initial reported budget the government of Rwanda set aside for such cases was clearly inadequate. I wouldn't begin to cover the sort of investigation required.
These cases, by the way, we should remind everybody, if they come to trial and they go through their usual, these are people going to end up with life sentences. This is not a small matter. And once they're out of the – if they were to have been turned over by the British, that would be the end of the road for them. I want to get your thoughts about this. We have Mr. Habinshuti, his case is pending, and the conservative government was inclined to remove him. They almost did remove him last fall. He was right on the cusp of being removed. And there's a case, of course, in the United States, in Baltimore, and many others in Europe and in North America. Do you think this will impact? And could you tell us, is the British media following this?
Yes, the BBC ran a short but good report about this. And just to remind your listeners, the BBC actually ran a very worthwhile documentary called Rwanda's Untold Story, which shines a very different light on the events of 1994. So maybe the BBC is minded to give this some publicity, which they certainly did. I mean, I have to, if you don't mind, read one more very sentence. This is the judge makes it, by the way, the decision quite readable, so you can read it in little chunks. So, for example, Leon Mugesera, she describes what happened to him in Canada, then she describes what happened in Rwanda, and then she does a separate four or five paragraphs or more about her findings. And she finds that they've failed repeatedly to grant legal aid to Dr. Mugesera, despite around 12 contacts with him in the form of letter, etc. She writes, "The evidence I have read and heard," and I'm quoting this, "leave me with considerable reservations about whether the assurances given by the government of Rwanda to Canada are being respected and whether Dr. Mugesera's trial is fair." I mean, this is a judge couching this in... These are actually strong words for a judge who's, after all, bound by the technicalities of extradition law, where you don't need a lot in the way of evidence to ground extradition. But she comes to the conclusion that the trials are unfair. And just to unpack what she just said, she says, "We got duped. The government of Canada got duped." And maybe willingly so, because it was quite a frenzy to try to extradite Dr. Mugesera, as there has been for other defendants. But there's maybe a bit of a light, because you've got a British court who's written a very lengthy, elegant judgment where it takes apart.
Well, but I recommend, you say it's 650, how many pages?
Well, it's not pages, paragraphs.
Paragraphs. It's not War and Peace.
Yeah. It's not exactly War and Peace. No, and you can sort of pick through it. And again, it's fair. It's not. She doesn't seem to have any intent to slam the Rwandan government or even their judicial system. But she just finds it's not up to snuff. It's 665.
Well, it's encouraging because you know. I hate to say it, but a couple of editorials in a sensational story and the rights of the accused disappear. And courts are supposed to, be principled in the manner that this judge is. So it's somewhat encouraging.
Yeah, she mentions, but at the beginning, but she doesn't go into detail because I guess it was so fresh, that a Dutch court has also recently refused to accept an extradition request,
Well, it says, it may be, we've often spoken of this, the Europeans, but particularly those of states that have had interaction with Africa, often do develop a different perspective than does the United States and Canada. Today, Counterpunch apparently has an article, I've been told, by Eve Engler, reviewing Canada's position on Rwanda, which has not been helpful to people facing extradition. So I really urge everybody to get the Eve Engler article. David, we really appreciate your telling us about this, and I hope it'll be people. Say it again. They can actually find this. Everybody could go to the a site and find it. Could you tell us how to do that?
Yeah. Again, the site is. You don't have to put the www. Judiciary, J-U-D-I-A. Sorry, I'm not.
You don't speak Kenya Wonder.
No, I don't actually, though, or even English, apparently.
Yeah,
judiciary is J-U-D-I-C-I-A-R-Y .gov.uk. And then there's a little search box that you'll find there at the top of the page. And in the search box, just put in Vincent Brown is the name of one of the accused.
All right.
And this is the first thing that'll pop up.
Wonderful.
Well, it's the government of the Republic of Rwanda versus Vincent Brown, etc. I'm not going to try the names again.
That's fine. That's fine.
Well, seems like they were very well represented by their counsel, honestly.
Indeed. Well, David Jacobs, we're very grateful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye. David Jacobs, Toronto lawyer at the ICTR, and It's a process that should be studied, and Eve Engler is helping out with an article in today's Counterpunch. Counterpunch you can find on the net.